BBC Radio Merseyside Spot. I'm delighted to say that in the studio is Raphael Honigstein talking about his new book, Klopp, Bring the Noise, which is out now. And it's all about Jurgen Klopp, a biography, and Jurgen Klopp is on the front. Rafa, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
But first of all, why write a book about Jurgen Klopp, as daft a question as it might sound?
I think he deserves his own book, maybe two. he is so large a personality, and I felt when he came over, when I was involved in some of the BT Sport coverage before his first game against Spurs, that there was so much interest that you couldn't possibly do it justice by just writing articles and doing the odd, you know, documentary or interview, that people were really interested to delve a little bit deeper in his life. And I found it, especially in Liverpool, that the obsession with football is such that people are always looking to kind of learn lessons from history, to, you know, look at what happened 10 years ago when a manager was in a similar situation, and how did he react then? Did he have centre-backs that were good enough at Dortmund? What happened at Mainz? And you cannot really answer these questions unless you do it properly. So I had an opportunity to write the book. There was a tremendous demand for the book in the English market, and also in Germany, where it's come out at a similar time. And it just shows me just that he transcends football to a certain extent, that there are people really see him as an interesting guy for the football, but also beyond it.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because there are some characters, and Jose Mourinho also probably fits into this category as well. You don't have to be a football fan to almost be a bit intrigued by Jurgen Klopp. And you saying there that you wanted to delve a bit deeper. Just how different a person or not is he away from the cameras?
Well, I think one of the revelations, in inverted commas, was that he wasn't different at all. That everybody I spoke to, from people who, you know, he grew up with when he was 5 years old in the Black Forest, to players at Dortmund, to players at Liverpool, say he's exactly the guy that you see on television. It's hard to believe, but that's who he is. And I knew it to a certain extent from my dealings with him, from a, you know, journalist coaching perspective, but it's different, of course, to hear it from the people that he's really spent loads of time with, and former friends, and well, friends that are still friends, who all say the same thing. And I think it's something that's very easily said but hard to do, to stay true to yourself and be loyal to who you are and not forget where you come from when you have as much success as he has. You know, this is not somebody who grew up with being a fantastic footballer, or grew up in a household where football was always a big thing and the father was a successful footballer. He basically came from nowhere to be where he is now. And I think it's easy to lose your head when you go, you know, it's like being in an elevator that takes you from ground level to 72nd floor in 5 seconds. It does something to you and to your head, possibly. You come a bit lightheaded, but he still is totally grounded, totally cool guy who you see on telly.
We'll talk about what he has achieved in his football managerial career, maybe slightly more than his playing career. But let's just start perhaps at home for him. You mentioned the Black Forest there, and his father as well, Norbert. What sort of an influence did Norbert have on him?
Well, a huge influence. Norbert was a sports fanatic, maybe even a nutter.
Who, more had, so than Jürgen.
Yeah, more so. Who had Jürgen, first of all, before Jürgen was born, his one of his two older sisters, Norbert tried to make them into footballers. So he went with one of them, and she would be heading balls at, in the rain as a five-year-old. And then if she didn't do it properly, she'd run around the pitch a few times. I mean, a real football fanatic, sport fanatic, who loved all sports, tennis, skiing, and who forced his kids to take part and compete, and would compete against them. He'd line up Jürgen on the tennis court and beat him 6-0, 6-0, and Jürgen would get hugely frustrated, and then the dad would say to him, "Yeah, do you think it's fun for me?" "No, it's not fun for me either, but we need to do this for you to be a better player, a tennis player." And then in the end, they ended up playing doubles together in his local club in the Black Forest. And just, I think when you have a dad like this who really wants to push you so far, it does two things for you. I think, A, it does instill in you that willingness to progress, to win, to really do well, because you get so much pressure to succeed. But on the other hand, I think you also kind of get the other side, where you can appreciate the things you don't enjoy and maybe handle things a little bit differently. So I think he's very much a blend of his dad and his mom, who's much more relaxed, who, you know, is calm, is more balanced. And I think he's got both sides to him. This fanaticism, the obsession with winning, with pushing players, but at the same time, a realization that it is only football, that these are human beings, that you cannot just, you know, kind of squeeze the last ounce of blood out of them in pursuit of sporting achievement.
Yeah, it's really interesting that, because we see Jurgen Klopp on the television, we hear him speak on the radio, and we forget there's a family behind him and two parents, and like us all, I suppose, we all take various aspects of our character from our parents. You tell a very interesting story, though. I just wondered if you could tell it now in the book about the role that Norbert played in a tennis match, and Jürgen had to intervene, and Jürgen's dad just did not like losing.
No, Jürgen's dad was physically, mentally incapable of losing, and there was one game where he was very clearly had a flu and was basically shaking and burning up on the tennis pitch. And Jürgen had to kind of drag him off and put him into bed because he would refuse to come off. And even later on, when sadly he, just before he passed away with cancer, he still sort of came back one final time to play for the seniors, for his tennis team. And that was, in Jürgen's words, sort of his last kind of triumph to show himself and to everyone that he was not going to be kept down, that he would still turn out and play a tennis game. And I think you cannot overestimate just how much of an impression such a personality has made on Jürgen. And away from the sport, everyone I asked who knew his dad, Norbert, said that Jürgen's larger-than-life personality and his ability to hold a room and to excite people and to tell jokes all comes from his dad, who was exactly the same.
That's really interesting. It's BBC Radio Merseyside Sport. You're listening to James Mountford in conversation with Rafa Honigstein, talking about Rafa's new book, Klopp, Bring the Noise. And another man, Rafa, instrumental, you tell us, in his life, Wolfgang Frank. It's probably a very anglicised pronunciation of it there. Klopp's taken parts of his management into his managerial career, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Wolfgang Frank was a football innovator, was a maverick who was completely ahead of his time when he took over Mainz in the mid-90s. Mainz were a team in the second division, always struggling, always fighting against relegation, no money, a few hundred, sometimes a few thousand people turning up in the stadium. So really a team that nobody cared about, that had no real perspective or, you know, realistic ambition to do anything apart from surviving. And they found themselves once again at the bottom of the table. And Wolfgang Frank, one day during the winter break, comes in and says, we're going to do something different now. We will play without a sweeper. We'll play with a back four, which to English ears doesn't sound like anything special. But yeah, in Germany, this is completely unheard of. The sweeper, I mean, you cannot play football without a sweeper. German football is all about the sweeper. It's about Beckenbauer, it's about Augenthaler, it's about all these guys who, from that deep position, not only hold the thing together, but then also come forward and play and kind of set up the attack. And nobody thought it was possible to play with a back four. And Jürgen Klopp estimates that it took about 150 hours of training to get this right. Because it's not about just, you know, leaving out the guy behind the back four. It's also about the way you move as a back four, which is completely different, because suddenly you play zonally, you play offside, you play much higher than you would with the guy behind you. And all of a sudden, mindset success. They saved themselves, they won games, and then the next season they were suddenly second and third in the second Bundesliga, threatening to get promoted. Then Frank unfortunately lost his nerve and resigned after two or three games that they'd lost. And he came back a few years later and basically the same thing happened again. He was very impatient. He blamed himself for defeats. He couldn't quite, I think, connect with players on the same kind of emotional level that Jürgen was able to. And I think he sort of took the good and the bad from that experience. He is very clearly his mentor. Certainly, tactically, all his ideas were hugely influenced by what Wolfgang Frank instilled in him. But at the same time, I think he looked at Frank and his shortcomings when it came to maybe be too demanding, doing things that were just asking players too much, like yoga sessions and autogenic training and this kind of stuff, that he also learned from his mistakes.
You talk about some of the aspects that Jürgen did or did not take from Wolfgang Frank. One of those, in terms of how Wolfgang Frank dealt with defeat. I mean, Jürgen Klopp, when he loses, he always seems to put a, perhaps not a positive spin on it, but he does say something that maybe kind of adds a bit of context to it, whereas Wolfgang didn't take defeat too well.
No, I mean, Wolfgang was somebody who immediately blamed himself, asked himself hundreds of questions, and could not deal with it. He did not have the patience, did not have the temperament to say, you know, defeat is part of football. For him, it kind of was soul-destroying, and ultimately, that's one of the reasons why he never really achieved anything, because he was too easily, I think, knocked off balance. And in a dressing room, which is a sensitive kind of environment, if your coach is a bit highly strung and complicated, I think it's problematic. Mm. With Jürgen, I'm going to say something really strange or something that might sound a bit weird, but I think he's a good loser. And what I mean by that is that he has this ability to internalize, rationalize, and deal with defeats, and just start again. Next game is another chance to win. The game after is another chance to win. Why think about what went wrong? Why let yourself get dragged down? There is no point. Be happy that you've got another chance to get it right. And that is something that is unbelievable. Because it's not just kind of, he put it in practice, because when you know that with Mainz, who had no realistic expectations of ever getting promoted, he actually got within a few seconds of getting promoted, not just once, but twice, and lost on the final day of the season in the most ridiculous, dramatic circumstances, twice, to then say, we're going to do it again. You know, this is the third year, we'll do it again, is much easier said than done. But he managed to do it. And I think that is something that is, as a coach, is a huge quality. Because if your leader, the guy who is in charge, you know, the face of your team, has that positivity and you feel that is really genuine, it's not just a guy saying, yeah, okay, we'll go again, but he really believes it, I think that takes you quite a long way as a team. And you've seen it in Liverpool that they've had bad spells, they've had this bad run in January, they've had a bad run not long ago, but still he doesn't lose his nerve and the players respond and they end up doing okay. And I think that's all down to that philosophical attitude he's got.
You mentioned Mainz, and of course that is where Jürgen Klopp got on the managerial ladder. He was a player manager, and you talk about him being seen as the perfect fit. He was the one who showed the most tactical awareness in the squad. What do you think led him to being so interested in that side of the game?
I mean, he was fascinated, I think, by what Wolfgang Frank had done and how Wolfgang Frank had managed to take a system and make a very average team suddenly a good one, and a team that could compete with teams that had much more money, had much better players. Suddenly, Mainz could beat these guys. And it's all down to Wolfgang Frank and his system. So I think that got him very, very interested. And it taught him a real big lesson. It was kind of an epiphany that, you know, this is what tactics could do for you. Because, again, I think in Germany, up until that moment, people talked about tactics, but basically believed that the better team wins. Okay, and if the better team doesn't win, it's because maybe they didn't want it enough on the day, or maybe they were a bit arrogant. But the idea that a worse team could win because they had a smarter idea, or, you know, collective organization, was something that really hadn't dawned on anyone in Germany for a long, long time. And Klopp took that lesson and put it into practice as a coach himself. He kind of turned back the clock, reinstalled some of the ideas, some of the systems, some of the tactics from Frank, and suddenly had success and fulfilled Frank's unfulfilled ambition, which was to take the team to the Bundesliga and become a Bundesliga manager. And even when he got relegated after 2 years and then failed to get back up, he'd done enough to convince Dortmund that this is a guy who can really make teams better. And, you know, again, it's kind of almost unthinkable now to think that Dortmund took a coach from the second division. But they saw beyond you know, that setback and beyond that final season where he couldn't get up again, and realised that he's got something very special and something that we need, because we can't go out and buy the best players in the world.
Yeah, well, I think that's a quality that some would like to see in the Premier League, maybe teams looking down, but that's a debate for another day. I just want to touch once more on his time at Mainz and go back to the very start. And I think one of my favourite stories from the book is you talk about Jurgen Klopp's conduct on the touchline. And we were talking earlier about what intrigues Jurgen Klopp, what intrigues people about Jurgen Klopp, football and non-football fans. And love it or loathe it, you cannot deny that the way he is on the touchline, the passion he shows, makes people sit up. And this is something you say that he had from day one.
He had it from day one. The people who saw his first game in charge thought there's a madman on the sideline jumping up and down. The crowd felt very entertained. They'd never seen anything like that before at Mainz. And I think after a while, it might have just been a way to let off steam, to, you know, get rid of the excitement. But I think after a while, Klopp realised that this is actually part of the job, that you coach during the game. You try to get the crowd on your side. You try to do everything you can, even though you cannot touch the ball and you cannot get on the pitch, to create that extra bit of energy, that momentum, that one moment that you sometimes need to completely turn the game around. And I mean, for me, I was at the game when Dortmund came here, and the power of Anfield and Klopp on the sidelines, sort of kind of just being that, almost like a witch doctor, you know, conjuring the spirits and the ghosts and the noise, blew Dortmund away. And that was sort of the culmination of lessons he had learned before on a smaller scale at Mainz and then at Dortmund. Also from watching Germany at the 2006 World Cup, where a very average side was swept on this wave of euphoria created by 80 million people and in the stadium. And he doesn't do it as an act. I think he totally believes that you can get one or two percentage points out of the team, out of the crowd, if you play your role on a touchline.
Liverpool were the recipients of Jurgen Klopp after Borussia Dortmund, where he achieved so much. He won titles, he won cups, he almost won the biggest prize of them all in the Champions League. When he got to that point, Jurgen Klopp, and it was time to move on from Borussia Dortmund, was the next step for him, was that going to be very important for him for his career? And why go for Liverpool when he must have had other offers?
Yeah, of course it was a huge step. I think it had been coming for a while. There had been offers before. Manchester United tried very, very hard. Ed Woodward came over to Germany, really tried to persuade Jurgen to take the job. That was in spring of 14. Klopp felt he hadn't quite finished at Dortmund yet, that there was still unfinished business, that he still hadn't quite, the relationship hadn't quite run its course. But you're beginning to see, I think, the signs, just as you did at Mainz, that he was maybe outgrowing Dortmund and maybe needed to make the next step up. And maybe also Dortmund as a club needed somebody different to change. After a while, I think it's very hard to just keep that intensity going. And from the very first moment, I think, when the Premier League was mooted and when the interest became real, everybody in Germany, people who knew him, people who didn't, said Liverpool is the perfect club for him because they have similar problems as Dortmund had when he took over. They are similar in terms of tradition, in terms of the history, in terms of the challenge, in terms of the financial constraints relative to their rivals. And it just felt so right on so many levels. And obviously Liverpool felt the same. He felt the same. And I think as soon as Liverpool came calling, and they had made a kind of a loose approach before when Hodgson was here, but Dortmund were just about to win the double and there was just no way Klopp would leave at that point. But when they came back to him in 2015 and he had time to think about it, I think it felt like a no-brainer to anyone concerned. And And I think both sides so quickly realised that this was the perfect match.
It's interesting you talk about his time at Borussia Dortmund, and there are definite parallels, are there not, with the first couple of years at Borussia Dortmund and how things are starting to pan out at Liverpool. Now, whether things will turn out in the same way, who knows? But at this moment in time, would you say there's almost a mirror image of the challenges he faced at Dortmund?
I mean, you can't say it's a mirror image because, you know, it's 10 years later. The Premier League is different to the Bundesliga at the time. The team that he had in Dortmund is different to the team here. What I would say is that you can see that this is a system, this is a playing style that doesn't necessarily work overnight. You have some big wins, you have some successes, but there are also setbacks. And it's a bit up and down. The general direction of traffic is up. But I think people get frustrated when those big wins then are not followed up by some of the smaller wins, the mundane results that you need to really win stuff. He finished fourth in his first full campaign. I have a lot of confidence in him because I know what he's done in similar situations. My feeling is that Liverpool fans reading the book might have a bit more confidence in him, seeing that he has found success in similar circumstances and also in similar time frames. It took Dortmund 3 years to really get going, to really suddenly become a force. And in many ways, if the owners here really continue to support him, and I think there are signs that they are prepared to invest a lot of money in this side, there shouldn't be any reason why he won't deliver trophies. Whether it will be the Premier League, which is sort of the holy grail in the city, I realise, I don't know. But I think they will come a lot closer than they have been in recent years. Mm.
And I know you speak to Peter Kravitz, one of Jurgen Klopp's assistants, about the tactics, and also Adam Lallana as well. Arguably the most improved player under Jurgen Klopp. Just tell us, what did he have to say about Jurgen Klopp?
Well, Adam Lallana was hugely complimentary, but then I guess he has to be because he's his coach. He can't really tell us he's a horrible man. But what I found interesting about what he told me was that he said, yeah, you know, pressing, and he'd of course been at Southampton under Pochettino, so he kind of knew the system a little bit, knew the style a little bit. But he said basically that to play that way is really players coming together and deciding we will work for each other. That is the basis of it. You can carry one guy, but already two, you cannot play like that because it takes a lot out of you. And it can only work if everybody is on the same page. And it made me understand just how the importance of togetherness and having that kind of unified dressing room is. Because if you don't have that, you cannot play that kind of football. You might be able to play Real Madrid football where, you know, there's a supporting cast and you give the ball to the guy up front and he'll score three goals. To play such a collective system, such a demanding system, you need to have that confidence, that trust in each other, and you need a manager to kind of reinforce all these ideas all the time. So I think this is the area where sort of tactics and man management really merge and go hand in hand. And I think whenever I write a book, not just this one, my aim is really to get closer to understanding how football really works. And I think to hear it from a player in these terms makes it much more tangible because I think it's easy sometimes you sit on the sofa and you say, oh, you know, tactically this is not working, this is shambolic or whatever, and you don't realise necessarily how these kind of things fit together. So Lallana, I felt, was hugely interesting on that.
Just away from football, how far can Jurgen Klopp take Liverpool, do you think, from what you know about, from what you've learnt about them? Where's the limit, if you like, for Jurgen Klopp?
I don't think there is a limit. I think there are constraints because of the competition, because of the financial and qualitative advantage that they've had, that they've built up over the years. I think Liverpool are playing catch-up. They have been playing catch-up for many years, for decades, you might say. But you can sense that there's a momentum with the stadium, with Jurgen, with FSG being prepared to spend more money, that I think you're getting closer to being in a position where you start the season and say, we are genuine title contenders. I don't think that Liverpool have been in that position I don't know for how long. I can't really think back to a season where you think, you know, they should win the title or they should win any other competitions.
Probably early part of the last decade, maybe under Rafa Benitez.
Yeah, but even then, I think they weren't necessarily the pace setters. I mean, he improved this team, a team full of players that really you wouldn't think of when it comes to winning trophies, through his tactics and his personality. But I don't think they could have necessarily claimed to start as favourites to win anything, even then. So I think Liverpool need to get to the position where if one of the bigger sides, one of the better sides, slip up, and it does happen, as it did 2 years ago when suddenly Leicester won, or even last year when Chelsea stole a march on the two Manchester clubs, Liverpool need to be in a position to be right there, able to capitalize on these kind of moments of weakness from the people above them, and slowly but surely reduce the gap. I think you have a manager who has shown already that he can reduce the gap by having the team being bigger than the sum of its parts. How far that can go, we'll have to wait and see.